From the National Grain and Feed Association's annual Grain Elevator Conference in Indianapolis, Indiana, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the ninth day of December. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll hear a press conference, or at least a portion of an edited version, that Sonny Perdue had this morning, and we covered a lot of areas I think you'll want to stay up with. Seth Meyer joined us here earlier in the day. He's formerly with WASD, or the World Agricultural Outlook Board. That's coming out tomorrow, but now works with FAPRI at the University of Missouri in Columbia. We'll have a good conversation with him. We'll talk about the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo, and Kurt Kimmel is here. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss what happened in Chicago. You and I are talking a little bit early in the day, so I can sit in on a couple of other conference things that are happening this afternoon, Kurt. So as we're in the middle of our conversation, beans are still up 7 to 9 cents. Corn just about a penny lower for the afternoon. What happened in the trade today?
Yeah, beans have become the leader of the complex, buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat's a feature theme from the commodity funds and traders in general. But the fundamental news behind it is that we heard last week that China would grant some tariff-free for pork and beans. And there is talk that this bean number could be as high as 1 million metric tons. So far, early in the day, we heard the talk of two cargoes, 120,000 tons of beans have been sold to China. Then as we moved into midday, as much as five cargoes or upwards of 300,000 tons of beans have been earmarked for China. So the key now is to see actual confirmation of these sales. This kind of fills the gap here until the South American crop becomes a little bit more available to the world market here as we go into 2020. Also, too, we were able to see strong Malaysia palm oil values. World vegetable oil markets continue to be strong. Today we do have bean oil up 50 cents, and so it continues to be a supportive feature here as we move forward. See how the report comes out tomorrow. It's supposedly going to be a non-event. Last week spent some time visiting producers at the Peoria Farm Show. And the corn yields better than expected, but these bean yields, they were a little better expected, but not in proportion with the corn. Tomorrow's monthly supply demand reports expect to show the corn carry out about 1859 versus about 1910 in November. Bean ending stocks 472 versus 475. Also, the Dow Jones Wire has put out world estimates on stockpiles, and those are coming in just about virtually within 1 million metric tons of last month. So I don't know if we'll see anything tomorrow for, say, most of the trade is gearing up towards the January report, if not the March stocks quarter grain report, to get a little bit more of a handle on where we are with some actual physical numbers.
Is the trade very worried about the December 15 deadline for tariffs, additional tariffs being put on China? That comes at the end of this week. And we still haven't gotten word, really, from the Trump administration as to how far along those conversations are or if they're getting better or worse at this time.
Okay, here's a rumor on that. We've got the FBM farmers meeting here in Omaha, and Sonny Perdue is scheduled to be at that meeting. And there is talk that it would be ideal for Sonny to call up the president at the meeting and say, hey, Ron, what's going on? And I would not be surprised for President Trump to go, I've got really, really, really good news. We've got a trade agreement with U.S., Canada, Mexico, and we are signing phase one. So we could see excitement here as we move through midweek with Sonny at this meeting in Omaha.
Well, we'll be following Mr. Perdue as he makes his way across the country. I won't be making that trip. That might be a little longer than I want to do, but I do appreciate that you are following up on that as well. Hey, thanks so much, and I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. A quick reminder, I sure would love to see you next week on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. The Ag Economist and I will be traveling all throughout the state of Illinois, starting out in southern Illinois in Mount Vernon on Monday, and then making our way northward through Springfield, East Peoria, DeKalb, and back to Champaign by the time we get to Friday the 20th. You can join us, but the last day to pre-register for $80 is today. So if you've not registered, go online right now at willag.org. Up at the top of the page, you'll find the links for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits and all the details on where we will be and who will be speaking. I'll be traveling, of course, with ag economist Scott Irwin, Gary Schnitke, Todd Hubbs. We'll also have Nick Paulson and Dale Latz with us. I hope that you can join us. That's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are next week. Again, if you want to sign up, you can do that. Pre-register today. Walk-ins are welcome, but pre-registration is cheaper. Details online at willag.org. Up next, we'll talk with Seth Meyer. He is formerly with the World Agricultural Outlook Board. He was speaking here at the Grain Elevator Conference in Indianapolis as a representative of FAPRI.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, we're here at the National Grain and Feed Association's Country Grain Elevator Conference in Indianapolis, and Seth Meyer joins us. He's with FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri out of Columbia. You might remember that we've talked to him several times in the past as he was with USDA and with the World Agricultural Outlook Board, where he chaired the board and would have been in lockup several times working with NAS to get the numbers ready for the WASDE reports. There is one tomorrow. Do you miss lockup?
Oh, I really miss lockup. No better way to put it than for an ag nerd, there's nothing better than pre-lockup day. Go around the world talking about crops, and then lockup itself, sitting down and going over things in detail and putting out a report. Miss it greatly.
So a couple of things. There's been a lot of, I don't know, distrust, complaints about USDA, NAS, the numbers that are developed, even about lockup, about the release of the numbers in the WASDE the last time around because it was delayed. From your perspective, somebody who came in from inside that institution and now looking from the outside, are they misplaced misconceptions?
Well, I think there are some things which are legitimate concerns. I think that some of the release delays are legitimate concerns. I think we made some changes to lockup that make me more comfortable. But I think this is a legitimate concern. I think you want to be able to trust that everybody's getting this at the same time. Legitimate concerns there. I think when we talk about some of the numbers with NAS, I think there's some of it's of just a misunderstanding of what it is they do and how they do it. Okay, so and it's even such simple things as the amount of corn acres planted plus the amount of prevent planted corn adds up more than 100 million acres. Doesn't mean that farmers intended to plant more than 100 million acres of corn, but it's a difficult message. You have to kind of start understanding things like segmenting crops by maturity in order to estimate yields, and pretty soon you're at something that's pretty complicated. But used to tell the story that, you know, if you think you've thought of something new in statistics, they've probably already thought about it. They're probably already doing it, and they do it in a very, I mean, everybody there takes their job incredibly seriously. So for me, I think it's such an unusual year. It's just been hard to convey to people that, hey, this tries to capture that, or yes, this is an unusual year. We'll go back and resurvey. Just an unusual year.
You had some outlook today. What are the primary drivers for this year, and what kind of outlook did you give the country elevator operators?
So I think it's a really tough year to give an outlook because the basic message is we get back to a more normal planting weather, more normal crop acreage because of it, and more normal yields. And you're talking about increases in supply for about everything, which means lower prices. So it's a real tough year to give an outlook that says, basically, producers are going to see lower prices for just about everything. Maybe from an elevator standpoint, you're saying, yeah, but more acres and more and bigger yields means more traffic. So maybe for them, it's a little bit more a return to a more normal business in terms of volume, but it's not an exciting year for producers, so for the people they're buying from.
This despite the fact that clearly corn and soybeans are short of what expectations were, so we have fewer of them around. That carryout number for soybeans, well, even for corn to this point, is still big.
Oh, yeah. You know, we get all excited that we're going from more than 900 million bushels of beans down to only 450 about million bushels of beans. And that's exciting. But folks need to remember, that's still a heck of a big stock of beans. But, I mean, if you got to, again, look for a silver lining, pull those stocks down in 1 year, what I thought might have taken us 3 years. Problem is we still need something to do with them. Return to acres about somewhere around 85 million with a more normal yield for beans. Maybe carryout starts up again without some kind of trade deal. Maybe it starts to grow.
So the trade deal, African swine fever, still big fundamentals that need to be flushed out and put in place.
No, absolutely. So when you look at African swine fever and you just look at, again, in my comments I said, hey, Chinese bean demand is probably one area USDA underestimated consistently for a decade. It was so strong, just beyond everyone's expectations. So this dip we've had where they're consuming, you know, the estimate of their needs has fallen 750 million bushels, that's huge. I mean, the fact that we're down so much year over year, and how African swine fever plays out, it has just cut their need for soybeans considerably. And so you got to look for other opportunities. Does a trade deal, you know, and these big numbers folks are throwing around for trade, pork will get you there, even if beans won't, in terms of absolute volume needs because the swine are reduced.
For the 2021 crop, do you have season's average prices for commodities?
They'd be awful consistent with what I told you today, which is somewhere around 360, 365 for corn and 860 for beans. In the absence of, and you know, these are normal weather, normal yield crop price estimates. You could have some shock. You could have a big crop, small crop, which will push off there, or you could have a trade deal, which pushes you off of there. But in the absence of that, it looks like bigger stocks, lower prices around the board.
From your vantage point now in Columbia, Missouri, do you think a trade deal can be cut with China?
You know, I think a trade deal can be cut with China. You know, I'm a free trader and maybe even a bit of a China data skeptic. We talked about Chinese data, so it's hard for me to envision China changing some fundamental behaviors. Okay, so there's this issue out there. What does a trade deal look like? Part of me says it's not open access. It's some type of quantitative that the Chinese wouldn't agree to a more open market. They might agree to a more quantitative fixed trade deal, which also worries me because that puts Sinograin and COFCO in strong charge of flows of commodities.
So in that case, you're talking about the sign on 20 to 40 to 50 billion bushels in purchases of all ag products.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, some of the big numbers folks have been floating around is $40 to $50 billion of agricultural commodities. Okay, if it's directed, that's one of the ways the Chinese government and industry is different than ours, which is the government can just tell COFCO and Sinograin to buy. And that's one of the ways you could achieve whatever deal is made. I think that is far more likely than open access to the Chinese market.
However, I get the feeling you don't think it's the better access, that the free trader in you just wants to compete on the open marketplace.
Oh, absolutely. I think U.S. producers were competitive. I think that, you know, while the bean demand may be slack, we certainly have pork. Pork supplies have been increasing here pretty well, and so we could sell them pork instead. So for me, it's always better in the long run to have a more open access where the signals can be sent instead of further empowering COFCO and Sinograin in order to make a specific volume target over time.
Hey, thank you so much, Seth.
You bet.
Seth Meyer is with FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri in Columbia. Well, prior to the time that Seth Meyer took the stage here at the National Grain and Feed Association to talk to the country elevator operators, the Secretary of Agriculture, USDA Sonny Perdue, spoke with him. And then immediately afterward, he talked to reporters. Here's an edited version of what was asked and answered by the Secretary. He began by acknowledging that he himself was part of the grain elevator system. He's a grain elevator operator, or was at one point, in Georgia.
Well, again, I think hope they took away authenticity. I'm part of this group, obviously, from a private sector perspective. I know the challenges, and I know while the president authorized market facilitation payments for producers, these businesses don't get any market facilitation programs, and some of them hurt as well when bushels are down and volume is down, and they have to struggle through as well. Hopefully for those who are on the input side of the business can have a little bit more money to be paid off in some of the issues and accounts that they're carrying. So I think, again, it's this is part of the amazing supply chain of American agriculture. The public typically probably wouldn't know what an elevator does, but it's the first step from the field that adds to the supply chain, the very efficient supply chain in the United States. And this is part of that whole step in the productivity of American agriculture.
You talked about December 15th, and you don't think the tariffs will be implemented, but at the same time, you said that you aren't clear if we're millimeters or miles away. Can you explain a little bit more what makes you think that we won't have the implementation of tariffs on December 15th, and what do you mean by we don't really know if we're miles or millimeters away?
Well, I don't know how to explain the fact that I don't know whether we're millimeters or miles. Obviously, it's the press reports go back and forth. It really is, depends on China. And we think their proposal is good, but are they serious? Do they really want to put in black and white they're committing to do? As I said, we in the United States are used to dealing in contracts. You do this, I'm going to do that. And that's what we're trying to do in this trade deal with China, and it's a little squishy. I don't know if I can define that word, but you know what squishy means.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a little squishy. I don't think the president wants to implement these new tariffs, but there's got to be some movement on their part to encourage him not to do that. And hopefully the signal that they sent over soy and pork reduction might be that signal in that way. But these are delicate negotiations. I'm not at the table day to day, and I speak to the negotiators, but I try to let them do their job, and they try to let me do my job. So that's the best way to do it. That's why no one really knows. I don't think the negotiators know what the end game is yet. And many times we never get to the end game until hours before the deadlines of these kind of things.
What are your expectations of this steel tariffs put on Brazil and Argentina? What do you think it will actually, how do you think it will actually help American farmers? That's the way it was presented.
I think it's a message to Brazil and Argentina that currency manipulation is not an appropriate method of export policy. And the president believes that the currency devaluation from those countries was really an effort to market their soybeans during our time of the year with our harvest there. Internationally, I think that's what he felt like, and I agree with him, is that lowering their value of their currency makes their products more affordable on the world market, and currency manipulation is not viewed very well in the United States. Let's just let's compete among products in a common value, not with currency changes.
And what makes you think that two Latin American presidents would devalue their currency, that something that would totally go against their support, their population supports for their government, just so that they could export some more soybeans?
Well, that's what I believe, and I think you'd have to ask them why they would do that.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue speaking with the press after he made an address to those attending the National Grain and Feed Association's annual Grain Elevator Conference taking place in Indianapolis, Indiana, today. Well, we're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, to talk about the weather forecast. I'd like to start in the Northwest Corn Belt, because they had an awful lot of corn yet to get out of the field. I don't know whether they can really have gotten much done. We'll know more about that yet this afternoon, probably. However, they may have gotten stopped again. Am I right that they got more snow overnight last night?
Yes, Todd. And, well, looking back over the past week, the snow cover that had been in place, it stayed there. Maybe a little bit of melting, but there still is an abundance of snow in the Dakotas and Minnesota. And, yes, a band of snow has actually moved across the Dakotas and Minnesota here, overnight last night and continued across Minnesota onto Wisconsin. And so that's going to be followed up by on about 2 to 3 days of unseasonably cold temperatures. But that looks to be really the only precip this week across that area.
Yeah, so the cold temperatures are actually pretty cold, too, in that area, I think.
Yes, readings will be dropping down into, actual readings dropping below zero in places such as like Fargo and Bismarck, and a few areas may even drop into negative teens going into tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, and then on to Wednesday morning before then quickly temperatures rebound and getting back to more seasonal levels.
There will be farmers in northern Illinois, parts of Wisconsin, Michigan as well that need to get work done. Any relief for them? Do you think they can get in? We are in the month of December.
Yeah, it's kind of hard here to picture all this given the calendar right now and still the amount of crops still in the field. And from at least for this week, again, the main precip this week is really just today across the Corn Belt. And so for those areas still in the east that need to harvest, the next couple of days, following the precip today, the next couple of days cold, but that's not really going to help the overall situation. Most likely it's later in the week as temperatures begin to moderate here and the lack of any kind of follow-up significant precipitation will at least allow, at least for a little bit better, a window or so harvest conditions. But likely still in general, the struggle will likely continue.
In South America, do we need to be concerned at all about either the Argentine or Brazilian crop? I know it's been dry the further south that you go.
Argentina is the area to watch with gradually increasing dryness risks. So that dryness has already been in place in pockets of the Argentina corn and soybean belt. However, for the next couple of weeks, it looks like the main rain development will be biased across the northern portion of the belt. So it's the southern acreage, including in that much of Buenos Aires and La Pampa, even the southern areas of Cordoba, Santa Fe, and Entre Rios, they're not going to get much rain coming up. And along with that too, there will be two periods of heat, one of which is right now or the next couple of days, where high temperatures will be climbing into the 90s Fahrenheit, even a few pockets in the lower 100s. And then that's going to be followed up by another period of heat that's now starting to be projected right around Christmas or right around 2 weeks from now. So that is really the focus of attention. It's not all of the Argentina corn and soybean belt, but it's that southern half or southern 60% or so geographically of the acreage that will see an overall decrease or continued decrease in soil moisture reserves for the next few weeks.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.